All right, we'll say good morning. Good morning. Let us begin by thanking all of our sponsors for this morning's shiur. To thank our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Adar Aleph. To thank Mrs. Selma Wall for dedicating all the Shurim and Drushals this month with immense gratitude for the refuels from Hashem and the merit of a refuel shalom for all of those in need and the schus of our great soldiers and the return of our hostages. The Schwartzbaum family, in memory of Rabbi Aaron Schwartzbaum, Aaron Yosef Ben Meir Zichron Levracha, and the Ziv Levine and Berman families, in memory of William Ziv Zev Shmuel Ben Yisrael Zichron Levracha. And of course, we dedicate all of Meseches Baba Kama Le'ili Nishmas, Master Sergeant Eliyahu Michal, Harush Hashem Yikom Damo. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Shalom have an Aliyah and the family in the Chamar. So with that, let us begin. Today's daf is Kuf Yud Aleph. We have a lot to do today. 111. Awesome. We have a lot to do today. And we are picking up on Kuf Yud Amud Beis 110b. And we are picking up, I believe, at... Where did we leave off? Rabbi Zeir Abai. Perfect. So we'll say, so pretty much like right in the middle of the page... 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 lines up from before it gets wide. So, remember again, we're dealing with a very fundamental Yisodistic question, which has to do with the following discussion. When the Kohanim, right, we've been talking about the concept that if a ger dies, Gezel Ager, dies, and ultimately, as remember again, Reuven stole from Ger, swore that he didn't. Ger dies, then Reuven admits that he stole from Ger. So the halach is he has to pay Keren, Chomish, and Asham. The Asham is a carbon, gets offered up on the Mizbeach, and the Keren and the Chomish go to the Kohanim. And again, we've discussed again which Kohanim it goes to, the Kohanim of the particular Mishmar. So now the Gemara is trying to figure out the question of what exactly is the nature of the Kohanim's right in that Keren and that Chomish? Are Kohanim like Yarshim? Are they like inheritors? Or is this Gezel HaGer considered to be one of the Matnos Kohuna? One of the Kohanic gifts. And we saw again in Afkamina that the Gemara, practical difference the Gemara gave was, again, what happens if he stole chametz, and now it's chametz sha'avar alav ha-pesach. If the Kohen is like a Yoresh, then again, you get what you get, right? Then ultimately, again, Reuven could come, show up to the Beis HaMikdash, give them the chametz sha'avar alav ha-pesach, and even though now it's worthless, it is what it is. If, on the other hand, it's a matnos kuna, it's one of the Kohanic gifts, then ultimately Reuven would be obligated to actually make financial restitution in the amount of the value of the item that he stole at the time that he stole it. So Rabbi Zeira Bari Hachi, so Rabbi Zeira asked the following, he asked the question the following way. If you say that Gezel Hager is like one of the Matnos Kuna, Halo Ibailan, Tahi Matana, then ultimately again, then this will be treated like a Matana. The Gemara says, Am Rahmana, Dene Siblahu. So the Gemara says, so Rabbi Zeira seems to feel that ultimately, again, in general, it would have one of the status of the Matnos Kuhuna. The Shaila is more like this. Rabbi Zeira feels the question is as follows. What happens if Reuven stole 10 sheep? Right, we've always been focusing on that he stole money. Let's say he stole 10 sheep. So now what's the Shaila? And now, again, so Reuven comes after the Ger died, and he comes to give these 10 sheep to the Kohanim. Gezel Ager. So Mechayvi Vafushim Minayim Meiser Olo. Ultimately, again, is he obligated to go ahead and give them, is the Kohen obligated to tithe these animals or not? Interesting. So the Gemara says, Yarshin Havu. So on one hand, do we see like they're inheritors? So we'll say on one hand, are the Kohen treated like the heirs? Are the Kohen treated like the heirs of the Ger? If they are treated like the heirs of the Ger, then again, when you inherit something, you are absolutely obligated to tithe it. O Dilma, Bekabli Matana Sabu, or maybe again, it's considered to be like one of the Matnos Kuhuna, Utran HaLokeach Vanitan Abu Matana, Pater Mimayser Behema. They will say, interestingly enough, in general, the halacha is that if you purchase something, or something is given to you as a gift, it is Pater from Mayser Behema. Now, again, the concept of purchasing something, we're not going to get into this right now. For our purposes, again, if you receive something as a gift, it is exempt from Meiser Behema. So we'll say, so now this sort of Zira is just reframing the question a little bit. That again, if a Kohen, let's say, gets 10 animals as part of Gezel Hager, is he obligated to tithe that or not? Is he obligated to tithe that or not? So on one hand, if he's like a Yerushan inheritor, the answer is yes. If it's like a gift, the answer is no. So bottom line, the question still remains the same, which is at the end of the day, when Kohanim get this Gezel Hager, how do we treat it, right? How do we treat it? Is it treated ultimately, again, as an inheritance? They're the inheritors of the ger. Or is it treated as a matana, as a gift, one of the Kohanic portions, so to speak? So let's analyze. Well, this is actually a fascinating Gemara. Tashma. Esrim ba'arba matnos kuhuna ninu. Nitnu la'arun l'banav. We'll say there are a total of 24 Kohanic gifts that were given to the Kohen, to Aaron and his sons. V'kulon nitnu b'klal uprat uklal. And I will say, Rashi points this out over here, that all of the matnos kuhuna are really learned out from the exegetical principle of a klal uprat uklal. Right? Remember again, a klal, an inclusive statement, right? A prat, a specific statement, and then a klal, another general or inclusive statement. So the Gemara says, furthermore, And I will say, interestingly enough, at the end of the Pasuk, also Psukim, talking about the Matnos Kuhuna, the Torah always makes reference to the Bris Melach, the salt covenant. Salt covenant. The idea whenever you see Bris Melach, just like salt, is so to speak eternal. So anytime you see the Lashon of Bris Melach, that comes to highlight that this is an eternal covenant. So again, Matnos Kuhuna, take a quick look at Rashi. You can see over here, B'klal u'pratu klal, l'chol kodshe b'nei Yisrael l'chol nesunim, l'mishcha, klal, zeh yeh l'cha, b'kodesh ha-kadoshim, min ha-eish, prat, kol matana b'fnei atzma, v'chol tshuma ha-kadoshim, b'chazer ha-kalal, hadar k'siv, u'brismelach olamu. So also, the idea over here is, again, Gemara's pointing out, that Matnos Kuhuna, in the Pasuk, were given in a state of klal u'pratu klal, and also, again, brismelach. Again, the salt covenant is mentioned in the context of Kohanic gifts. Now, why is that? This is incredible to teach us, call him a kaimon, we'll say first of the widest lines, to teach us that whoever upholds the 24 matnos kuhuna, kilu mekayim klal uprat uklal ubris melach. So it's actually a very dramatic statement, that whoever goes ahead and upholds and gives the Kohanic gifts, it's as if he has upheld the klal uprat uklal. Now, Rashi points out to everyone, what does it mean? He says, as if he held up the klal u'pratu klal, kol ha-Torah kula, shenitna lidrosh b'klal u'pratu klal, u'ki'ilu ki'em kol ha-kabano shenitla b'em bris melach. But say, get ready for this. When you give matnos kuhuna, and you give the portions of the Kohan, right, the gifts to the Kohanim, it's as if you have upheld the entire Torah, klal u'pratu klal, the entire Torah, and as if you have offered up all of the karbanos. Incredible. On the other hand, kala over alehem, kilo over aklal upratu klal ubris melach. Conversely, if you don't uphold the 24 Kohanic gifts, you don't give your matnos kuhuna, it's as if you have transgressed the entire Torah, and ultimately, again, you have not given, or you've desecrated all of the kabbalah. So we'll say, so by the way, this by itself requires, obviously, a healthy dose of explanation. We're not going to give it a healthy dose of explanation. We'll just give it a little bit of explanation. What does this mean? You give the matnos kuhuna, and it's as if you've upheld the entire Torah, offered up all of the karbanos. You go ahead and you don't give the matnos kuhuna. It's as if you haven't upheld the Torah and not given the karbanos. Matnos kuhuna are important, but lamaisa, why this level of importance? Both say, so if you think perhaps just on a very basic level, if you think about matnos kuhuna, both say, what do matnos kuhuna demand of us? What do they demand of us? It demands of a person to take their stuff and ultimately, again, to share it to someone else. We'll say one of the hardest things to do in life is to be a charitable and giving person. Why? Because at the end of the day, I worked for my stuff. And I worked hard for my stuff. In order to be a charitable and giving person, what do you need? What do you need? More than anything, you need emunah. You need emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that emunah is a twofold emunah. The first part of the emunah is, number one, it's not my stuff. That's the first part of it. It's not my stuff. La Hashem ha'aretz umlo. Everything belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Ribbono Shel Olam put certain things in my custody, right? He put certain things in my care. But why does he put them in my care? Not simply for me to lavish them upon myself, but to do something with them. So that's number one. And number two, also Emunah teaches me that whatever you give, you will always get. Remember again, the whole Yisod of Tzedakah is Aser Bishil Shetit Asher. Tzedakah is the only mitzvah you are permitted to perform, testing on Kadosh Baruch Hu. Mashallah, I'm going to give a lot of tzedakah on the condition that you give me a lot back. Do not try that with any other mitzvah, right? Never perform mitzvahs with testing on Kadosh Baruch Hu. Tzedakah is the one mitzvah you are allowed to test HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You are allowed to say, Ribono Shel Olam, I am going to extend myself. I am going to push myself. And in the schus of me extending, I expect you, literally, I expect you to not only give it back to me, but give me more. You're allowed to do that when it comes to the mitzvah of tzedakah. So we'll say, as such, we see that Matnos Kuna, which the paradigmatic example of tzedakah, we see represent this idea of emuna. So a person who has emuna, number one, that the wealth is not mine. Number two, that whatever I give, I will get. A person who has emuna, we'll say, if you have emuna, you have everything. If you have emuna, you have everything. So if I have emuna, it's as if I've gone ahead and offered up all of the kabbalos and kept the entire Torah. Conversely, if a person doesn't have emuna, they're going to be very reticent to give, very reticent to share. It's mine. And whatever I give you is less for me. Person who doesn't have emuna, let's say, if you don't have emuna, you don't have anything. If you don't have emuna, you don't have mitzvahs. If you don't have emuna, you don't have kabbalos. If you don't have emuna, I don't have anything in my life. Such a profound and incredibly dramatic gemara. Let's go back to the Elohim. These are the 24 gifts. Elohim. Eser b'mikdash. Four of these gifts have to be eaten within the confines of the Beis HaMikdash itself. Adal Yerushalayim. Another four of them have to be consumed within Yerushalayim. Right? Yerushalayim. The city of Yerushalayim. Ve'eser b'gvulim. And 10 of them could even be consumed ultimately again outside of Yerushalayim altogether, just in Eretz Yisrael. So we'll say, Eser b'mikdash. So what are the 10 Kohanic gifts that have to be consumed? We'll say, this is actually a fun and beautiful Gemara. We'll kind of put a little asterisk over here. This is one of the ones that we have to come back to because this is just a great journey through Matnos Kahuna. So what are the 10 in the Beis HaMikdash? We'll say, I love Baba Kama. Big challenge is I always feel like I'm just always trying to catch my breath. Right? There's always Baruch Hashem. So much to pack in and so much to do. So I apologize. Right? Eser b'mikdash. There are 10 gifts that have to be consumed in the Beis HaMikdash. Chatos behema, right? Chatos of an animal. Chatos ha'oth. Asham. Asham vadai. Asham taloi. Again, these are different types of sin offerings. Right? Remember again, Asham vadai is when you've definitively transgressed. Asham taloi, possibly transgressed. Zivchei shalmei tzibor, certain communal offerings. The lug shemen shal mitzorah, the lug of the oil used in the purification of the mitzorah process. Mosar ha'omer, remember again, the omer is the barley offering. The leftover of the omer goes to the kohanim. Shtei ha'lechem, the two loaves offered on Shavuos. V'lechem ha'panim, remember again, is the bread placed on the shulchan that's exchanged every week, given to the outgoing shift. V'shiyari minachos, and any leftover of karban minchas, minachos. So these are 10 Kohanic gifts that are consumed by the Kohanim, but must be consumed within the confines of the Beis HaMikdash itself. Next, the Arabi Yerushalayim. Another four could be consumed in Yerushalayim. What are those? Habachora, sub-bachor animals. Bikurim, first fruits. Mura minatoda, the sacrificial parts from the toda. Ve'el nazir, the nazir's ram. Ve'oros kachim, and sacrificial hides. So all of those can be enjoyed ultimately again in Yerushalayim. V'asara b'gvulin, another 10 items, another 10 gifts could be enjoyed even outside of Yerushalayim. Truma, Truma's Meiser, right? Just a portion you take from Meiser. Chala, right? From the dough. Reishis Hagaz, first shearings. Matanos, these are generally the Kohanic gifts that are taken from any animal that you offer up. Pidyon Aben, Pidyon Petach Hamar, so first, right? The money from the redemption of the firstborn son. Right, pidyon petach hamar, redemption of the firstborn donkey. Usteachuza, steachuza means somebody consecrates their ancestral fields. They fail to go ahead and redeem it. The Gizbar temple treasurer goes ahead and sells it at Yovel. When everything reverts back, that does not go back to its original owner, it goes to the Kohanim. That's steachuza, steacharamim. Somebody makes their field the chirim. Gezel hager. I'll say all of that was for this, right? That's it. Two words. Gezel hager. And I will say, and what's an example of one of the Matnos Kuna, which could be enjoyed even outside of the Beis HaMikdash? Gezel Hager, or even outside of Yishai Nebos. And Rashi points out over here, Gezel Hager, four lines up from the bottom, Gezel Hager, Nami Kari Le Matnos Gvulin, Shem Nitnu Lekoina Mishmar Chutz Yushalayim Yatsa, Ve'el Hashem Yala Yushalayim Lehakin. I will say, so what this means is like this. So let's go back to our case. If Ruvain, right, who stole from the Ger, swore that he didn't, the Ger died, now he admits that he swore, he has to pay. Karen, Chomesh, and the Asham. If he meets the Kohen, you know, in Tel Aviv, he can go ahead and give the Kohen, the Karen, and the Chomesh, and the Asham. Obviously, the Asham has to be brought to the Beis HaMikdash to be offered there. but the restitution, so to speak, to the Kohen could be made even outside of Yerushalayim. So we'll say, what do you see from here? Vekakari mihas matana. We'll say, what do you see from here? You see from here that Gezel Hager is called one of the matnos kuhuna. It's called one of the Kohanic gifts. So shmamina mekabli matana savu shmamina. So we'll say, ultimately, again, see from here that halacha lemaisa. Ultimately, again, they are called Mekabli Matanos, and ultimately, again, not Yarshim. So we'll say, just to kind of plug this back in, what this would mean, therefore, Halacha L'maisa is both of the keys that the Gemara mentioned before, which is if the Gezel Hager consisted of 10 animals, because it's a Matana, ultimately, the Kohen would not be obligated to tithe it. Conversely, if the Gezel Hager represented now Chametz She'avar Alav HaPesach, Reuven would not be permitted to drop off a loaf of bread at the Beis HaMikdash. Rather, he would be obligated to pay the value of the theft as it was at the time it was stolen. So we'll say a very important halacha l'maaseh nugget, that ultimately, again, Gezel Hager is considered to be one of the 24 Kohanic gifts. Incredible. Let's say, I just point out something, also a good Moshe Haskell in this. Let's say, sometimes in life, you go through a lot of process, right? Just in order to come out with one small idea, one small takeaway, one small piece of inspiration, or one small, you know, life nugget. So Gemara goes through all of this. Why? For two words. You could have just said, by the way, Gezel Hager is a matana, right? That's it. But again, we're saying this is life. That sometimes to get even to walk away with something that looks relatively small, you have to go through a relatively large journey. Okay, Sigmar goes weiter. Am Rabbi. So I'm sorry. Nasan esa kesef la'anshi mishmar. Sam Rabbi. Shma mina kesef mechaper mechza. Di lo mechaper mechza. Hava mina mahadra liyarshan. So we'll say, remember again, this case over here, where if halach l'maisa, the Mishnah said that Reuven, let's say Reuven went ahead and gave the money to the Kohanim, but then died before he offered up the asham. So what did the Gemara say? Reuven's kids can't get the money back from the Kohanim. Right? They can't get the money back. Once it's been given, it's been given. Even though, again, remember, what was the previous case? The previous case was Reuven was on his way up to Yerushalayim to give the money to the Kohanim. What happened? He died. In that case, what's the halacha? The kids keep the money because there's no longer any need for kapara. The difference just is once he's given the money to the Kohanim, as much as he has not yet offered up the asham, the kids could say, hey, our dad is dead. He never went ahead and, right, our father died. I don't need to get right into the monetary issues. But Lamaise said, again, he doesn't need the kapara anymore. So give us back the money. Misha says, no, it doesn't work that way. Once the money's been given, the money's been given. So Gemara says, what do you see from here? So Gemara says, Amabai Shmamina Kesach Mechaper Mechza. You see from here that the giving of the money itself affects partial atonement. Why? Because we'll say if the giving of the money, even without the Yashem, didn't affect partial atonement, Havamina, Mahadil Yashem. Then ultimately, again, you should give it back to the kids. In other words, if the giving of the money to the Kohanim didn't affect atonement at all, so when the father dies before having offered up the asham, let the Kohanim give the money back to the kids. My time, because well, so you can say like this, why did Reuven give the money to the Kohanim in order to affect Kapara? If it turns out that Kapara wasn't affected, then what? Then the Kohanim should return the money back to the kids, because that's not why Reuven gave them the money. Elamai, the fact that they don't return the money indicates to us that the giving of the money itself affects a partial kapara. So the Gemara says, Elamiata. So if that's the case, look at the following case. Chatos shemesu ba'ala, tepok l'chulin. Why don't you say, both say, if Reuven was going to bring a chatos, right? And Reuven died before he was able to offer it up, it should go to chulin. It should revert back to being a mundane animal. After all, da'daitid da'achi lo afrisha. Now remember, we know what's the halacha with chatos shemesu ba'ala. What's the halacha? So ultimately, it's left to die. It's left to die. But why? Why don't we say it wasn't Reuven's kavana? To have Reuven's kavana when separating this animal was that it should be offered up as a carbon. If it's offered up as a carbon, great. If it's not offered up as a carbon, then at the end of the day, it should just go ahead and revert back to being chulin. Don't bring this proof because remember again, I will say the halacha of chata shemesu ba'ala, that if you have a chatas whose owner died, that animal is left to die, that is a halacha l'moshe misinai. That's halacha l'moshe misinai, so you can't really argue on that. So for example, in our case, I will say, remember again, what happens if Reuven, same case, Gezel Hager, Reuven dies. Reuven severed the asham and died before being able to offer up the asham. What happens to the animal? Remember, we saw the mishmar to the animal, and the animal is left to graze. Left to graze. Ultimately, until it develops a mum. Once it develops a mum, then it's sold off, and the money is used to purchase a nedava. So why don't we say, I don't understand? Reuven was makdish this animal with the intention of going ahead and offering it up. If that doesn't materialize, let the animal revert back to chulin. To which the Gemara says, no. The Gemara says, Asham nami hilchasa gemirila, kol shebechatas mesa ba'asham roa. No, because Asham is kind of like a sister to chatas. So in any case where a chatas is left to die, the halacha Moshe Mishnah tells us that a Asham is left to graze until it develops a mum, and is then redeemed with the money still being used for sacrificial purposes. Elamiata. So we'll say, all the Gemara is just trying to prove is this concept that it must be that money goes ahead and accomplishes partial kapara. Why? Because if it wasn't so, the kids should really get back the money because they should be able to say, our father never had intention that the money should just rest with the Kohanim if it's not going to affect kapara. If the money's not going to do anything, then the money should go to us. But you see from the fact that the money doesn't go back to the kids, that the money does affect partial kapara. So the Gemara is just trying to challenge this assertion that if you don't have in mind for something, it reverts back to its original status. I'm trying to question this. Elamiata, here's an interesting case. Yivama shenafa lifnei muka shchin, teipok below chalitza, da'adaiti da'achilo kitsha atzma. So we'll say, listen to this. So Reuven's married to Rachel. Reuven dies without children. Rachel falls to Reuven's brother Shimon. Shimon is a muka shchin. He's covered in boils. So ultimately, again, Rachel should be able to emerge from this without Khalid. So why? Because one can make the pretty cogent argument that she never had das. In other words, she never had das that her kiddushin should ultimately allow her to come to be a yavama to Shimon, who's covered in boils. So if that's the case, again, she should go out without chalitza. To which the Gemara says that's not true. Hasam anan sadibas, in a case of kiddushin tap of kuf yud aleph, demenach la bekaldu. So we'll say, so ultimately, again, now literally this translated, it means that Rachel is happy with anyone. Then we'll say, now what does that mean, Rachel's happy with anyone? Kid Reish Lakish, to Amreish Lakish, Reish Lakish says, Tav lemesav tandu, me lemesav armala. That a woman would rather be with anyone than to be alone. Now let's analyze this statement a little bit. Take a look at Rashi. Tap Rashi 111a. Demenach nechaluhu. Lizkadish lerishon shu shalem. Asaf exeshim yamos tizakek le'achal. So we'll say, what the Gemara is saying is like this. In general, every woman when she gets married knows that what? There's the possibility of yibum. Right? So what does she do? She does a cost-benefit analysis. She sees Shimon. But she also really likes Reuven. Reuven's a good guy. So therefore, again, she kind of has this risk-benefit analysis that at the end of the day, I'd rather take my chances, knowing that there's a slight possibility that I'll come to be a Yavama to Shimon. But again, for me, that risk is worth it in order to go ahead and marry Reuven. So again, the way Reish Lakish phrases it is, it's better to be with someone than to be with no one. What that means, the way the Gemara is using that is, she is okay taking the risk about what may happen in a Yibum situation because it's worth it for her to have this marriage. Okay, beautiful. So let's go back there. Tanabana. So Nasan Esakasef, Li Yeho Yarov. So remember again, we then got into the interesting case in the Mishnah of what happens if you end up. So remember, Reuven shows up to the Beis HaMikdash. He's going ahead and he's giving two things, right? He's giving, well, three things. Keren, Chomesh, and Asham. The idea is who you're giving it to. You're giving it to the Kohanic group on shift, right? The Mishmar, who's currently on call. The Mishnah then dealt with an interesting case of what happens if you end up giving the money and the karban to two different mishmoros. What happens in that situation? So let's deal with that now a little bit. Says the Gemara, Tana Rabbanon. Actually, really, really very interesting case over here. Nas Tana Rabbanon, Nasan Asham li Yehoh Yariv, v'kesef li Yedai. So let's remember again, just the order, as we saw it already in yesterday's daf. The order in yesterday's daf is that the mishmar, the mishmar of Yehoh Yariv comes before the mishmar of Yedaya, right? Yehoh Yariv are the first mishmar. So what happens? So Nasan Asham li Yehoh Yariv v'kesef li Yedai. Now, one more important piece of information over here. That remember, ideally, the order is important. Meaning what? Really, what are you supposed to do? When Reuben shows up in the Beis HaMikdash, what's the proper order of atonement? Right? Give your money, then give your carbon. Kesef comes, which again, logically makes sense. You're coming to atone for the fact that you stole from someone. So carbonos are very nice. Carbonos are very nice. Even better than carbonos, money. Right? Give back that which you stole. So remember, so therefore the order is important over here. So now watch what happened over here. So we'll say in this case, there's two things happening over here. Number one, Reuben gives the Ashav, he gives the carbon to the shift of Yehoyarov, which is the first shift, and the money to Yedaya, money to the next shift. So we'll say, so now two different shifts received it. Now, let's assume right now that everything is extant. Right? Everything is still there. No one's offered up the carbon. The money hasn't been spent. So what do you do? So listen to this. Yachzer kesef eitzel ashlam de Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that Yehoyarif, Yedayo, who received the money, should give the money to Yehoyarif. In other words, the money should follow the carbon. Whoever is in possession of the carbon, those are the ones who should get the money as well. Yachzer kesef eitzel ashlam de Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda holds, Yedayo, second shift, should give the money to Yoyar, the first. The Chum say no. Yachzir Asham Eitzel Kesef. It's very interesting. The Chum say no. No, in fact, again, rather, the Asham, the carbon, should be given where the money is. So therefore, again, Yehoyariv should take the carbon and give it to Yedaya, who has the money. Okay, so what's going on over here? Hey, Chidam, you're supposed to watch this. Ilem Ediyavlan Asham Liyoyariv Bimishmarta Diyoyariv. So if we're talking about that Reuben showed up and he gave the Asham to Yehoyariv, when Yehoyariv was on shift, right? They were the Mishmar, and the Kesef, the Yedaya, the Mishmar, the Yedaya, and then he went ahead, he came back next week, right? And he gave the money to Yedaya when Yedaya was on shift. And I don't understand. Zeh Zacha B'Shalom, Zeh Zacha B'Shalom. So we'll say, I don't understand why this is such a problem, right? Because each group acquired their own thing. I'm Rabbi. No. Malcolm asking, what's the case over here? To Yoav Ashem liYehoyariv b'Mishmarto diYehoyariv, the Kesef liYedaya b'Mishmarto diYehoyariv. So Rabbi says, no. What happened over here? What happened over here, Rabbi say, is it was Yehoyariv's shift. So you gave Yehoyariv the Ashem. That's fine. It's their shift. But for some reason, Reuben gave Yedaya the money, even though it was Yehoyariv's shift. So he gave the money to the wrong shift. So Rabbi Huda Sabar. So Rabbi says, now this is machlokes. Rabbi Huda Sabar. Kevan de la mishmaras the yedaya who the yedaya can sinale hilchach yachzer kesef eitzel asham. So we'll say, Rehuda Shita makes a lot of sense. Rehuda says, listen, yedaya, guys, it's not your shift. It's not your shift. So you shouldn't have accepted that money. Now that you received it, you need to give that money back to Yehoyariv, or not back. You need to give that money to Yehoyariv because it's their shift. Okay. So we'll say, pretty straightforward case. So what's the Rabbanan? Rabbanan Sari, watch this. Say, no. Who does the fault lie with? The fault lies with Yehoyariv. Why? Yehoyariv, you know the order. The order is money first, Asham second. You should not have accepted the Asham before Reuben paid the money. So because you accepted the Asham first, you're therefore in violation of the proper order. We kenas, we penalize you. And therefore, Yehoyariv, you have to hand over the Asham to Yedaya, even though what? It's not Yedaya's Mishma. Now, obviously, then Yedaya will wait to offer up the carbon until it's their shift. So we'll say, so this is the fundamental machlokes. You have Rabbi Yehuda penalizing Yedaya for accepting money that they should not have accepted, therefore give it to Yehoyariv, who has the Asham, and you have the Rabbanan, the Chachamim, penalizing Yehoyariv. Why did you accept an Asham when payment hasn't been made? Incredible. So the Gemara says, Tanya, Amar Rebbe, Ledev Rebbe Yehuda, according to Rebbe Yehuda, Im Kidmu Yehoyariv Vekrivu HaAsham. So we'll say, now watch this. This is actually very interesting. So Rebbe says like this, according to Rebbe Yehuda, if Yehoyariv went and offered up the Asham, so we'll say, so now remember again, Yehoyariv received the Asham, didn't receive the money. Therefore, if Yehoyariv were to go and offer up the Asham, Yachzor v'yavi Asham acher, v'yakrivu b'nei Yedaya. So we'll say, really then, remember, so if Yehoyariv offered up the Asham before the money's been paid, then we'll say, what has to happen? Reuben has to bring another Asham, give that over to Yedaya, right? And this way Yedaya will have both the money and the asham. V'zachu alalu b'mash shebiyadon. And ultimately, again, and Yedaya, so we'll say, now, zachu halalu b'mash shebiyadon ultimately means that Yehoyariv will also benefit from the asham that they went ahead and offered up. So the Gemara says, Amri, l'may chazi asham pasahu. I don't understand. How are Yehoyariv benefiting from this asham? It's an asham basal. Amarava, lioro. While it's true, you can't consume its meat, but l'may said, they will benefit from the hide. Okay, Tanya, Amar Rebbe, the divrei Rebbe Yehuda, according to the words of Rebbe Yehuda, so im kiyem asham, yachzir asham etzal kesef. So I'll say, so now remember again, I'll say, let's say, according to Rebbe Yehuda, let's say in a case where Yehoyariv didn't offer up the asham, right? They have it, they didn't offer. So what should they do? They should give it over to Yedaya. They should give it over to Yedaya. So the Gemara says, Yaksha Asham Eitzel Kesef. Vahar Rabbi Huda. But that's not true. Vahar Rabbi Huda Kesef Eitzel Asham Islay. But that's not what Rabbi Huda said. Rabbi Huda said that actually the money should follow the Asham. So in fact, Yedaya should give the money to Yehoyariv. Hacham Ayaskina, what's the case over here? Kegon Dinafak Mishmarto Di Yehoyariv Velo Tavo. Velo Tavo. So we'll say, what's the case? Over the case is where Yehoyariv kind of left their shift, and ultimately, again, no one claimed the money from them. I have a hakamash malon da'achule achilu gabayhu. So we'll say, what do we see from here? That sometimes the mishmoros can be mochel, right? They can forgive things one to the other. Another bryson of Amar Rebbe, the Divrei Rebbe Yehuda, im kiyem asham, yachzor kesef eitzel asham. Rabbi Huda says, if the asham is still in existence, in other words, if Yedaya didn't offer up the karban, then ultimately, again, then, sorry, if Yehoyariv did not offer up the karban, then Yedaya should give the money back to Yehoyariv. So the Gemara says, Pshita. So the Gemara says, Hachi Islay. Hach, I'm asking, and what's the case over here? Kigon dinafak mishmartom dahani, vidahani lo tavu. We'll say, you might have thought that again. We're talking about a case over here where Yehoyariv's, their mishmar ended. They left the Beis HaMikdash. And meanwhile, again, there was no claim one against the other. So you might have thought, Dahani v'dahani v'lo tavu, ma'al detema. We'll say first wide line, not of the widest lines, intermediate wide lines, ma'al detema, achule gabi hadadi. You might have thought that ultimately, again, if Yehoyariv leaves the Beis HaMikdash, and they made no claim against the Yedaya, then maybe, again, they just forgave the claim. Kamash malon, daminan kivan d'lo tavi l'hadu b'resha. Kevan Dalotavi the Hajjabresha. No, because we say since there was no, even though there was no official claim, nevertheless, put things back as they really should be. And therefore, again, the money should be returned to Yehoyariv because the money follows the Asham. So we'll say, the way we paskin, so just there's really two variations of this case, right? So really what's happening over here, the way the Gemara is setting it up is you're giving, Ruvain is giving the Asham to Yehoyariv during the Mishmar of Yehoyariv and giving the money to Yedaya, not during the Mishmar of Yehoyariv. I'm sorry. And giving the money to Yedaya during the Mishmar of Yehoyariv as well. So the money is being given to the wrong Mishmar. So what do you do in such a situation like that? So we'll say, so the Pashtos, if everything is still in existence, so the halacha is that Yedaya give the money to Yehoyariv. That's the way we paskin. Essentially, Yachzer Kesef Eitzel Asham, right? Then the money goes ahead and follows. The money is given back ultimately against Yehoyariv. And again, they both say the logic over there is actually a very simple one. What's the logic? It's Yehoyariv's shift, right? Yehoyariv's shift, and Allah Alamai said they're entitled to everything. Yedaya got the money inappropriately. So therefore the money goes ultimately to Yehoyariv. Where it becomes a bit more complicated is where let's say Yehoyariv received the asham, they offered the asham. So we'll say, so now in this case, that triggers the previous halacha in the Mishnah, that remember again, that if the carbon is offered up without the receipt of money, then what's the halacha? The carbon is no good. In that case, again, we would go ahead and cause Ruvain to have to go ahead and bring another carbon. But Bepashos, he would end up doing that with the Mishmar of Yedaya, which means then Yedaya would keep the money and also have the Asham as well. Okay, good. So the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, Shemevi gzela atshalohevi asham. So then the Mishnah said, if you bring your carbon, if Reuben brings his asham without paying back the money, the asham is meaningless. Right? The asham, you can't bring the carbon without paying back the money. So the Gemara said, "How do we know this from?" So Amar Rav, Amar Kra, Ha Asham Hamushav LaHashem LaKoin Milvat Ela Kiporim Sheichaper Bo. So we'll say the way the pasuk is structured is the pasuk essentially first speaks out payment and then speaks out the carbon. Michlal the Kesef Bereisha. So what was it? The pasuk itself, when speaking about the process, speaks out ha'asham. Remember again, we were establishing yesterday's daf. What's the asham? The asham in that, right? Asham in the pasuk refers to keren, right? The end of the pasuk, milvat ela kiborim esher chaperbo. That's the carbon. That's the carbon. So you see that monetary restitution is mentioned before the carbon. As such, money must be given before the carbon is offered. Michlal the case of Risha, Amrah Mirabban al Rabba Elamiata. So we'll say that's the case. Now we'll say, so what's interesting over here is what the Gemara is really seizing on is it says Ha'asha Mushav Lasham Lakoin Milvad. Milvad, in addition to the carbon that's going to be offered, or aside from the carbon that's going to be offered. So the way the Gemara is understanding is the money's mentioned first. Milvad teaches you in addition, but in addition means first money and then in addition carbon. So the Gemara says, so Elami Atal, Milvad Olas Haboker. What about by the Karban Musaf? Right? When the pasuk says Milvad Olas Haboker Sherli Olas HaTamid, does that mean that the Musaf comes before the Tamid Shal Shachar? Right? The Gemara says, so Hachin Nami Michlal de Musafim Beresha. So does Milvad teach you about say, so therefore, does Milvad mean that whatever is mentioned in the pasuk comes second, and whatever was mentioned prior comes first? Well, Karban Musaf is mentioned in this context before Tamid Shal Shachar, the morning communal offering. So you're telling me then that the Karban Musaf is offered up before the Tamid Shal Shachar? So what we learned, Vatanya, Minay Shlo Yehid Dabar Kodim the Tamid Shal Shachar. We'll say first the widest line, how do you know that nothing should ever be offered up before the Tamid Shal Shachar? Tamid Lomar, Va'arach Ala Ola, Va'amarava Ha'ola, Ola Rishon, Amrali Ana Me'ashe Yechaper Bo Nafkale, Va'adayin Lo Kiper. So Moses says, I learned it out ultimately again from Asheich Hupar Bo, and ultimately again, Kapara has not yet been affected. So Moses says, essentially, he says, you're right, we learned out from different pasuk. Asheich Hupar Bo, you will get atonement. You will get atonement, which tells you that what? Which tells you that even once you've given the money, ultimately atonement has not yet been affected. When is atonement affected? Only after the carbon has been offered. So Moses says, so bottom line, Halacha Lamaisa, the Gemara says, money comes first, but Lamaisa, atonement is not fully effected until the carbon is offered up, right? But yet, if you were to offer up the carbon first, that would not work. Okay, let's go back there. Nosan Lamaisa Karen. So we'll say, however, the Mishnah did say, if you give Karen, right? Let's say Reuven paid back the Karen, but he didn't pay back the Chomesh. So that does not hold up Kapara. So you could have Kapara even if Chomesh is outstanding. So the Gemara says, Tana Bara Minayin Shem Hevi Me'ilaso V'lo Hevi Ashamo Ashamo V'lo Hevi Me'ilaso Shelo Yatsa. So we'll say, so how do you know? Now this is talking about, we'll say we're switching gears over a little bit to Me'ila. So about a person who, remember, what is Me'ila? Me'ila is illegal benefit from consecrated property. When you go ahead and you commit Me'ila Chas V'Shalom, so what's the halacha? You have to pay back Keren, principal, plus a Chomesh, an additional fifth. And we'll say, in this context, the Lashon of Hevi Me'ilaso, he brought his Me'ila. Me'ila refers to Keren, refers to principal, and Ashamo refers to the Chomesh. So when repaying your Me'ila liability, how do we know? Shem Hevi Me'ilaso v'lo Hevi Ashamo, that if you paid back principal, but you didn't pay back the fifth, or Ashamo v'lo Hevi Me'ilaso, or you paid back the fifth, but you did not pay back the Keren, Shelo Yatsa, that you have not yet discharged your obligation. Tamal Omar, Be'ela Hashem v'nislach lo. So we'll say, because Torah used Lashna, Be'ela Hashem v'nislach lo. That ultimately, again, Slicha and Kapara, Rashi says over here, Mashma, in Slicha ela b'shnehem. So full forgiveness is only achieved both through Keren and Chomesh. Uminayim, Shem hevi Hashem at shlo hevi mi'ilaso, shlo yatsa. And how do you know if you pay back the fifth, but you didn't pay back principal, that you have not fulfilled your obligation? Tamalomar be'el ha'asham 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 bikvar. So ultimately, again, it says be'el ha'asham ba'asham bikvar, meaning assuming that you have already repaid your principal. Yachol kishim she'el va'asham ma'akvim kach chomesh ma'akiv. So I would say that just in the same way that the karbanos Rashi says over here be'el ha'asham mashma ba'ayel shuba b'chovel ha'asham shukeren. I'm a Karen Beresha Maisi. Okay, so you might have thought, Yachol Kashim Sha'el Va'asham Ma'akvim, Kach Chomesh Ma'akev. So you would have thought the same way that El Va'asham is Ma'akev, so too Chomesh is Ma'akev. And there could be no Kapara without Chomesh. Tamud Lomar, Be'el Ha'asham V'nislach Lo. Ayel Va'asham Ma'akvim Behekdish, so Ayel and Asham are Ma'akev by Hekdish. Ve'in Chomesh Ma'akev. but the repayment of the additional penalty fifth is not ma'akev. So the Gemara says, v'yilameit, hekdish mehedyot, behedyot mehekdish. And also we can learn on hekdish from unconsecrated things, hedyot, and unconsecrated items from hekdish. How so? So what do you learn now from Hekdish Mehedyot? Ma asham dahasam karen, af asham dahaka karen. So we'll say, so first of all, just like by Hekdish, this is Hekdish Mehedyot. Ma asham, right? Just like I will say, we saw by Gezla Ger, that what does asham mean? What does asham mean? Asham means karen. So too by Hekdish, ultimately, asham means karen as well. And I can learn out hegdish from hegdish. My hegdish ain't chomish ma'akev. Just like by hegdish, the bringing of the penalty fifth is not ma'akev the kapara. Does that hold back the kapara? I've hegdot nami ain't chomish ma'akev. So too by hegdot. Rabbi said the case of hegdot as gezel ager, chomish is not ma'akev. So Rabbi said, bottom line, again, the takeaway from here is that again. So we remember what's fascinating about the sugya Rabbi said is actually the halacha lemaisa. Really is pretty clear, right? So in Reuven wants, so again, if we kind of tie this all together, Reuven stole from Ger, right? Swore that he did not steal. Ger dies. Now Reuven admits that he lied. What's the halacha? Three-pronged liability, Karen, Chomesh, Asham. Where does he do? Who gets that? And I'm saying, I remember again, what's interesting about this is, there's no claimant. The Ger is dead. Who is the claimant? The Ribono Shalolam. Right? La Hashem, La Kohen, comes to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu gives it to the Kohanim. Which Kohanim get it? The particular Mishmar that's on duty. It's his obligation now is come to the Beis HaMikdash to give it to the Mishmar. The halacha is the way that there is a process. There is an order to kapara. What's the order? Money, right? Karen, Chomesh, and then Asham. If you went ahead and you mixed up the order, as long as everything is extant, it's not a problem. It's not a problem. If Reuven died on the way up, never gave the money, then what's the halacha? The money becomes property of the Yarshim. If he gave the money to the Kohanim and then died before the Karban was offered, what's the halacha? Kohanim keep the money, Karban goes ahead and is left to graze until it develops a mum, then redeemed money used for Shlomim. You see from here that even the giving of the money itself affects a quasi-kapara. Affects a quasi-kapara. If you go ahead and, okay, then we saw all the sugyas regarding giving it to the different shifts. If you went ahead and you reversed the order, so remember again, Asham by itself does not go ahead and affect Kapar to the point that if you gave the Asham, and the Kohanim offered up the Asham before you went ahead and you gave the money, what's the halacha? You have to bring another Asham. What's the status of that Asham they offered up? Status would be an Asham Pasal. Even though it's an Asham Pasal, they can't eat it, but what do they get? They go ahead and they get the hide. And again, the last piece of halacha is very important. What is the status of Gezla Ger? Gezla Ger is considered to be one of the 24 Matnos Kuhuna. Why is that important? It's important because as a Matnos Kuhuna, it is Meiser exempt, right? It is tithe exempt, it's tax exempt, so to speak. One of the Matnos Kuhuna, Bosai, Hajra Halacha goes La'itzim, Shkoyach. Incredible. All right, I'm a base. Now this is the proper size of the page of Gemara. I just want to point out, right? This is the way Gemara goes to look. So here we go. Hagozel umachil asbanas. Well, it's an interesting case. So now we'll say this is not gezel ager. I mean, it can be gezel ager, but again, simple case of gozel. So Reuven steals umachil asbanov, and he used the gezel to go ahead and support his kids. Umachil asbanov v'niach lifneihem, and he left it to them. Rashi says over here, osher niach lifneihem hagzila kayem. So we'll say, there's really two cases in one over here. So Reuven stole something. He supported his kids. I don't mean to make this sound like a sob story, right? But the point is that Reuven stole and he used it to support his family. And the stolen object is still in existence when Reuven died. Right? So whatever, he stole a cow and he used the milk and he used everything to support his kids. Now he died and the cow is there. What's the halacha? Petura milashalim. The children do not have an obligation to pay back the stolen item. Now, again, this already requires a lot of discussion. Now, this is an interesting phrase as well. If it's an item that has achrayis, I will say now, generally, a davar sheish bo achrayis means real property. Real property. So we'll have to see exactly. So it sounds like if it's real property, they are obligated to pay back. Okay, a lot to unpack over here. Amar Rav Chista. Gazal v'lo nesei shabayim. So Rav Chista says an interesting halacha. Reuven steals from Shimon. Shimon did not have yeyush. Right, which means again, Shimon did not give up on retrieving his item, and therefore did not relinquish ownership over his item. So Gazal Nasiya Shabailim Uba Akhav Akhlimena so Ruvain stole from Shimon. Rabbi said, now watch this. Now let's just take a simple case. Right? Ruvain went ahead and stole a sheep from Shimon. Okay. Shimon did not have Yeush. Levi comes along. And Levi goes ahead and shears the sheep and uses its wool. Okay. So what's that halacha now? So now we'll say, let's say Shimon gets back his sheep. Now obviously, the sheep is woolless. So ratza mizegova, This is actually interesting. So Shimon, the victim, has the ability to sue either Reuven or Levi for compensation. Right? Why? Reuven is the thief, and Levi benefited from something that was not his. So therefore, again, when Shimon is looking for repayment, Shimon could go after either Reuven or Levi. Ratsa mizegova. So the Mar says, "By time, what's the reason? Because kol kamadlon isay shabaylim b'rushu say demarikai." Very simple. Because as long as the owner of the object has not experienced yeyosh, therefore the object is still in his domain. So therefore, Reuven is a thief. And when Levi took the wool, so we'll say, here's what's interesting. Levi taking the wool from that sheep that Reuven stole from Shimon is no different than Levi going into Shimon's property and shearing Shimon's sheep. So either way, both of these individuals illegally benefited from something that is owned still by Shimon, and therefore Shimon has the ability to sue for compensation either from Reuven or from Levi. Why? Because as long as the owner has not had Yeush, the animal is still in his domain. Okay? Beautiful. Beautiful. Now watch this. Let's contrast that with the Mishnah. Tanan. Hagoz v'machiles banav nechles neyem peturim milashalim. You know what I say? What did the Mishnah say? Reuven steals a sheep. And what happens? He dies. And now what happens? His children inherit him. And what's included in the Yerusha? A sheep that their father Reuven stole. But according to what we just said, what should be that? And yet the Mishnah said that's what? The children are not obligated to pay back the stolen item. But I don't understand. We just said before that as long as the owner has not had Yeush, that object still remains in his possession, which means that Reuven's kids, right? Reuven alav shalom, right? Reuven's kids have a sheep in their possession that doesn't belong to them. It belongs to Shimon. So why aren't they obligated to give it back? So Tiyufra de Rav Chista, this obviously refutes Rav Chista's position. I'm looking at Rav Chista, Kitanya hi la'achar Yeush. Interesting. So Rav Chista says, no, the Mishnah must be talking about a situation where Shimon had Yeush. Right? We're talking about a situation where the owner ultimately experienced Yeush, and therefore halacha lemaisa. In that case, the kids, the Yarshim of Reuven, are permitted to keep the sheep. But Einachinami, if they were to know that the owner, Shimon, did not have Yeush, they would be obligated to pay back the sheep. Very interesting. Okay. So let's analyze this. So now again, same case, right? Reuven stole from Shimon, then Reuven dies, leaves behind an object. The Mishnah indicates that the children are not obligated to pay it back. So remember again, now the way we just set it up, at least when Rav Chista, is it's talking about a case of after Yeush, right? The owner, original owner Shimon, despaired of ever retrieving his object, there was Yeush, and therefore again, heirs are not obligated to go ahead and repay the item. Amar Rai Racham is also Maris. This tells us, Rishus Yorej Ki Rishus Lokeach Dami. Shabbos says, so what this tells me is that when children inherit the property of their father, they almost become like purchasers. Now, what does this mean? Take a quick look at Rashi. So Rishus Yorej Ki Rishus Lokeach Dami. V'havide Ki Rishus Acheres. In other words, when children inherit property, it's almost as if this property is transferring to a totally different legal domain. The kevan do kimna lemaslis and laachar yeush kani lohu yasev yeush shini rishus tibiyeush kedi lo kani demi the local temperature of alma. So we'll say it must be like this. We've set up now. The Mishnah is talking about a case of after yeush, right? So Reuven stole the object. Shimon had yeush. Reuven dies, and the item now passes down to his heirs. So we'll say we saw this before in our yeush sugyos that yeush by itself is not enough to affect acquisition. It has to be yeush and shini rishus, a change of domain. So it must be that when children inherit their father, that is considered to be a change of domain. That children are almost considered to be like purchasers from their father. So now I have yeush of the owner, change of domain as affected by inheritance. And that's why the kids, the Yarshim of Reuven, are permitted to keep the stolen object. Okay. So the Gemara says, Rava Amar Rava says, Rishus Yorish Lavki Rishus Lokeach Tam. Rava says, no. Rather, an inheritor's domain is not considered to be like a purchase. Not considered, inheritors are not considered to be a separate Rishus than their father. So what's the, we'll say if that's the case over here, so then why don't the Yerushim have to return the stolen object? What's the case over here? Bisha Kisha Achlum. Interesting. The case over here, we'll say, is where the Yerushim consumed the object. Right? They came back. They came back after the Levaya. Everybody was hungry. So what did they do? They shechted the sheep. Right? The sheep is no longer the Rashi's Kisha Achlum. La'achem Isa Savim v'nigza in Yachal Atol and Shari Lokazlua. They ate the sheep. So mostly now, in this case where they eat the sheep, obviously I will say, Shimon can't make a claim on Reuven's kids. Why not? Why not? Reuven's kids didn't steal it. We didn't know. We had no idea. So therefore, again, the case is where they ate it. They consumed it. If they consumed it, there's nothing to pay back with anymore. One second, the verse is 1 second. Hamidik Tani Seifa, Im Hayadavar Sheish Bo Achrayis Chayav and L'Shali. Remember again, the Seifa of the Mishnah said, which we'll talk about, that if it was a Davar Sheish Bo Achrayis, which we seem to mean meant real property, or at least an item that's in existence, Michlal, Deresha Begzela Chayam Es Haskinon. Sounds like the first case the Mishnah is talking about a case where the stolen item is still in existence. So how can you say it's a case where they consumed it? Amar lecha Rava, Rava says, this is what it means to say. Hachi chomer, im heniach lahem avin achrayis nechasim chayovim l'shalim. Oh, all right, they'll say, so here we go. Here we go. So the Gemara says like this. The Gemara seems to say, if halacha l'maisa, the father left for them achrayis nechasim. Rabbi says, now what does that mean? What that means is like this. The achrayis nechasim, the Gemara wants to suggest, doesn't refer to the stolen object. What it means is like this. If, technically speaking, if, right, Reuven stole, let's just play this out. Right, Reuven stole, and he left the object to his children. If the object is in existence, then what should the kids do? What should they do? They should go out and they should return it. What happens if they consumed the item? So now we'll say, what is their liability? So the Gemara wants to suggest, or Rava wants to suggest, it depends. What does it depend on? If the father left behind real property, then the kids should really repay the stolen object from the real property. Now, what's the logic of that? The logic of that is, Reuven as a thief, when Reuven stole, he has an obligation of restitution. That obligation of restitution vests upon his real property. His real property becomes encumbered to pay back that which he stole. If he did not do so during his lifetime, that lien against real property still remains. So even when his kids inherit the real property, they should make restitution to the real property. Everybody say, no, we'll stop over here for today. We're going to pick up with this. It's really a fascinating sugya about the obligation of heirs to repay the stolen property of their father. And we ask you to be continued tomorrow. Shkoyach.